Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
So, JD, you've spent years underground in the West Virginia coal mines. Now you're spending years interviewing people who've experienced some of the strangest, some of the darkest, and some of the most unexplained events in Appalachia. After everything you've seen and heard, what scares you more today? The things that happen underground or the things that happen above it?
Sure, yeah. So to clarify, I was a surface miner, but I have family. Like, my father-in-law was underground for forever, and he was actually the first show we did was ghost stories from an underground coal mine. So As far as the scariest thing, I don't know. I find new things all the time, whether it be at a haunted location like Trans-Allegheny, or I just went to a cemetery out in the backwoods. It's called St. Bernard Church, and they have a little cemetery there. And I got such it's a weird euphoric feeling when it happens, when you just know there's something else there. So it just varies. I've had I would say the time that would tell me that ghosts are real would be at Trans-Allegheny, no doubt, for sure. But other than that, I just, the most terrifying thing is what humans can do to each other, as you know, more than anyone.
Yes.
And we cover that too. And that's probably the most disturbing things that we cover is true crime. So yeah, it varies. It just varies, but I don't know. Well, I always want to answer that one question one day, though. Are ghosts real? And I'm 95% there, so we'll see how it goes.
I'm Steve Murphy, DEA Special Agent retired and now host of the Game of Crimes podcast. If you've seen the Netflix series Narcos, then you know my story. I now bring you stories of heroism and bravery from our law enforcement and military heroes, and occasionally from the criminals that they faced. Welcome to Game of Crimes. Hey, everybody. Listen, today's guest is, as you heard, spent 9 years working in the coal mines, but he was a surface miner. I didn't realize that. And I'll be the first to tell you, it's not something I would ever do is be a coal miner. I'm first generation non-coal miner in my family. Then he taught himself filmmaking and media production because you can see the correlation between coal mining and that. He created his own media company. He's done hundreds of interviews, if not thousands. He's host of the very successful podcast called Creepalachia, which focuses on everything Appalachian, right? You got to check this show out. So our guest today is J.D. Belcher. J.D., welcome to the Game of Crimes, brother. Glad to have you on here.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here, man. I am in no way qualified for this show. Let me just tell everybody that. I have no qualifications whatsoever, but I respect law enforcement so much, so it's an honor to just be asked to do this. So thank you so much.
You have a lot of investigative abilities that you're not giving yourself credit for. And listeners, you'll know more about what I'm talking about here as we go along here. If you're wondering how we met, my daughter-in-law lives in Beckley, West Virginia. I've got two granddaughters up there, Emily and Maddie. And my daughter-in-law, Kanda, sent me a DM one day on Facebook. Now, I don't check my DMs, but maybe once every quarter, to be honest with you. So a lot of you that send me messages, if I don't reply, that's why. That's not the best way to get a hold of me. But for whatever reason, I happened to look at that one. And she sent me a link and she said, hey, this guy just did a little piece on you. And I watched it and I thought, well, who the heck is this guy? And then I listened to him and I thought, wow, he made me sound pretty good. I like this guy. You know, I'm easy and cheap, JD, just so you know. But I took the time to reach out and do a little research on him. I reached out and contacted him and said, man, thank you for doing that. And if you're interested, I'd love to be on your show. And just now we're recording this in late July, and what, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, I was at your house in your studio interviewing on your show, Creepalachia, which just posted yesterday on July 29th. So if you haven't seen it, I know you get tired of hearing me on the different things that I'm on, but if you want to go listen to that, had a good time talking to JD. That's how we met. And man, thank you so much for having me on Creepalachia.
Yeah. And I want to publicly apologize to your family. I was supposed to put a shout out to the grandkids, I think, at the beginning. And I just now remembered right when you said that, because you mentioned, you was like, could you just please add that in there? And I was like, yeah, sure, of course. And I totally spaced that.
Not a problem. And Nemi and Maddie, I apologize that I didn't mention you. I've had full intentions of mentioning you on Creepalachia, but we're mentioning you now.
That's right. Yeah. So we got to make up for that. I started the podcast. So how far are we going back? How far do you want to go back? It's totally your call. I got to interview you, so now I'll follow what you say.
Oh, here we go. Okay. So let's just start off by telling us about your background, where you grew up, what your family dynamics were, your brothers and sisters, what mom and dad do, where you went to school, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So basically, I was born in Ashland, Kentucky, which is still Appalachia. It's eastern Kentucky in Boyd County. And got a brother. He's 6 years older than me. He's essentially like a father figure in my life. And after some marital problems, my mom and dad got divorced, and we ended up moving to Welch, West Virginia. And that is a decision that I'm forever grateful for. I was scared to death at first because it was kind of similar, but a little more rural, and moved on top of Belcher Mountain and was around my grandparents all the time, which was great. And I just started learning what life was like as a divorced kid. And I've always been creative, always been doing stuff creatively, drawing. I had a little video camera I would do stop animation with when I was a kid, and always getting into something. And this was pre-cell phone era, and I'm very grateful for that.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, for sure, man, for sure. We was the last of the Mohegans when it comes to cell phone technology. And I'm 40, I'll be 41 in August, but so growing up, I never really knew what I wanted to do. I went to college and dropped out pretty quick. I actually went the first time was going to be criminal justice. Mm-hmm. I did not. I went 3 weeks and dropped out. And then I was going to be a teacher, and I dropped out pretty quick there too. And thankfully, I actually went to electrician school, and it was a 9-month program, and I went 8 months, and someone offered me a position to haul coal at a coal mine in Boone County, West Virginia. And I said, you know what? I'm broke, so I'm going to drop out of this school. I have a month left, but whatever. And then I got a job for Massey Energy hauling coal. And that was the first real job I ever had. And that kickstarted my ability to take care of myself. And thankfully, I worked my way up. Everything I've always done, I've never been happy. I've been happy, but I've never been satisfied, if that makes sense. Like, I enjoy what I'm doing, but I want more. And even now, I have everything I could ever possibly want, but I just keep on trying to build something like a caterpillar. And I've done that there to where I eventually got a union job working for Bluestone Coal. And I started running heavy equipment, and I lied to get the job. I said I could drive a rock truck. They put me in it. Thankfully, they're very easy to drive. You just got to try and not kill everyone on the mountain. And I was able to do that successfully, and they hired me. And that kickstarted the next 7 years of my life. And along the way, I was a college dropout, and I was making $90,000 a year. And that's the blessing of the coal mines that people don't realize is like, you can make a very good living in West Virginia. That kind of money is like high middle class. So you're going to be doing really well. And I could have done that for the rest of my life, but I was never really a good coal miner. So it was 2012 and a little show came out and it was called Walking Dead. And I think it actually came out in 2011. And in 2012, I decided I wanted to make a zombie movie. So only problem was I didn't know anything. So I started going to YouTube and teaching myself everything I could possibly teach myself. And getting really obsessed and dedicated and spending all these nights in the attic, like hours upon hours. When I would get home from the coal mines, I would get on YouTube and I would find tutorials and I would figure out how to do certain things. And I never did make that zombie movie. I made a couple trailers, but that led to a position for a editor at a local car dealer. So I said, well, I'm not happy being a coal miner. I'm not a good coal miner. I appreciate the people I work with. I love the money, but I hate this. So I took a huge pay cut, which was about 50%. I think it was a little over 50%. I was making around $40,000 a year after I left to edit car commercials. And I had the insurance was awful. And which is a big deal for me because I'm a type 1 diabetic. And my wife just said, I'm so sick of hearing you say like you're going to do, just go ahead and quit and do it. Like, let's just do it and see what happens. We'll be fine. I'm working. I'll support your sorry, but we'll just do whatever. So thankfully, she supported me and I quit. And that's how I learned to do this productively. And I spent 3 years making car commercials. Until eventually in 2016, I said, I think I can start a business. So I quit. Me and the art director, well, he's actually the chief creative officer of my company outside of Creepalacha, JJM Multimedia. It's not affiliated with Creepalacha, but he's the chief creative officer now. We quit our jobs the same day together in 2016. And I told him, give me a year. He had no plan. He just didn't want to be there working without me. He said, give me a year. And thankfully, a year came by. He was the first employee that was hired on salary as of January 1st, 2018. And fast forward to now, it's a team of 7 people working on that team. We got health insurance. Everybody's making good money. Our retention is through the roof. And we've done work for hundreds of organizations.
Wow.
And that's a long story to say. Eventually, I had free time. And in 2024, I said, I want to start a podcast. I want to get back into why I started doing this, which was creepy stuff, making horror movies, telling ghost stories, all that. And I built a studio in my basement.
Very nice studio, I'll say.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. I put it together in about a month. We had things firing up. And my first guest was my father-in-law, who was an underground coal miner. And he told me a bunch of ghost stories. And I said, I really enjoy this. So thousands of stories later, that started in November of 2024. And we're getting to where now Creepalacha is becoming sustainable. So I think it may be my retirement route. We'll see. But that's how we got here. In 10 minutes.
Well, let's back up here just a little bit then. So,
sure, yeah.
Did you plan on being a coal miner, or that's just an opportunity that presented itself?
Yeah, it just presented itself. I never really planned on it. I just, I was kind of just a roamer in the world. I never knew really what I was going to do with my life. And I was kind of, it could have went south. I let a car get repossessed. I was making bad decisions. My health wasn't the best. I wasn't taking care of myself. And it was not looking good. And thankfully, one of my friends, actually, I don't really talk to him these days, but they got me on with Massey Energy. And I said, you know what? And it was $11 an hour. And I was like, I'm going to do this. And I drove, my commute one way was 2 hours.
Oh my gosh. Where'd you have to drive to?
Yep. It was, I drove essentially from Mercer County to Artie Bailey. Well, no, that wasn't Artie Bailey. Like Mercer County to Boone County. And you go over Bolt and you go down this Route 99. It's country road majority of the time. People who know Bolt knows exactly what I'm talking about. And wow. It was 2 hours one way every single day, 10-hour shifts, 10-hour shifts, and then 1 8-hour shift on Saturdays. And it was 6 days a week, six on, one off every single week. And you literally, I have so much respect for coal miners because typically on a schedule like that, especially, you do not have a life. You just don't. You're providing and that is it. And your coworkers are like your family. And that's life, man. You eat gas station nachos and you try to not smoke two packs of cigarettes today. Like that's life. And I'm appreciative for those who do it, but I just know I wasn't that good at it, but I did keep it to pay my bills and until I took the leap. So yeah, it just presented itself, thankfully, by the grace of God or whoever. It just showed up.
Grace of God, brother. I'm with you. How old were you when you started working at the mine?
So that would have been in 2005. So I was around, I think it was May of 2005 that I got officially hired on. So I would have been 20. I couldn't buy a beer, but I could mine coal. I couldn't buy cigarettes now. I didn't know they changed it to 21. It was 18 then, but anyway.
Were you married back then?
No, I wasn't at first. I was in and out of a relationship for years, and eventually, the stars aligned. I was in some random occasional relationships, and the stars eventually aligned and introduced me to my wife, Jenna, who is now my wife. And we met, it was the Fiesta Bowl in 2008. WVU was our very first date. And ever since then, we've seen each other every day. So, wow. Very grateful for her. I couldn't have done anything without her. It's so important to have a partner that supports your crazy ideas. So
absolutely. I may have one of those.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, Mr. Narcos. Like, you got to have someone there willing. Well, and also yours had to just hang out for months and just be like, well, I don't think he's dead. I think he's okay. So shout out to the wives out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I refer to them as our unsung heroes because they, and it's true for any occupation, but especially high-risk occupations, whether it's law enforcement, military, miners, electricians, whatever it might be, any high-risk occupation, man. And our families, we expect them to stay home and take care of everything and make the household run well and take care of the bills and problems and the kids in school. They never get the credit they deserve. So I'd like to give shout-outs to our unsung heroes there.
Oh, yeah. 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 And Jenna, she's so much more productive than me. Like, she's solving mass problems for water infrastructure and road infrastructure and doing all these things while I'm just running around now telling ghost stories and all these different. Thankfully, she took a break recently, but like, she's always been the type to where, she doesn't need me. Let's be honest. She doesn't need me. but we enjoy being career oriented and enjoying this life together. Like, we support each other and really love seeing each other do well. And, I think that's important too, of like, people have to have your own goals. And it doesn't mean necessarily that your partner has to be involved. It's just important that your partner supports those goals. And we do that with each other. So,
well, you guys are, you're ambitious. There's nothing wrong with that. You're both entrepreneurs. There's nothing wrong with that. You're teaching your children work ethic. That's very important. I mean, it's all good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, man. Very blessed. Very blessed. The thing now that I get to do is I get to meet all these people with these amazing stories. And really, it's just all I have to do is be the conduit. Mm-hmm. I just have to figure out how to package this in a way that people can absorb it, no matter who they are. But also, too, while supporting our home, while supporting Appalachia and saying, hey, like, there's more to this place than what is typically said. And like, yeah, do we have poverty? Of course, but poverty's everywhere. I mean, it's drug addiction is everywhere. It's like, I want people to know that Appalachia has more stories and more history rooted into its foundation than probably anywhere in the country. And I am a little biased, but there's a lot that happened here. So we got to put it on record.
Absolutely. I have to say, I had never heard of Mothman until I checked out your show. What is Mothman?
Sure. So for those who don't know, now Mothman is the most popular, arguably, cryptid out there, but he's essentially a cryptid, and a cryptid is basically a mysterious monster that we can't necessarily prove, but we have third-party evidence of having. So like Bigfoot, Flatwoods Monsters, one from West Virginia. If you look, every state now, cryptid tourism is a huge thing. And a lot of them are silly, but a lot of them have relevancy to them. And Mothman is probably one of the cryptids that has the most lore tied to him than any cryptid out there. And it goes back to, I don't know if you know who Chief Cornstalk is.
I don't.
Okay, so Point Pleasant, West Virginia has so much history, and it has a lot of Civil War history. And Chief Cornstalk was basically a chief who agreed to a peace deal with the white man, essentially, back in the day. And him and his family went to essentially sign this treaty, and they were double-crossed, and he ended up getting killed. And legend has it, actually, that Chief Cornstalk put a curse across all of Point Pleasant. And there's a memorial there commemorating him, and because he was a good dude. He was always about peace, and he was double-crossed. And that is kind of what people say. They tie that to the Mothman, but the Mothman wasn't being seen until the 60s. So the first sighting was a bunch of gravediggers in a place called Clendenin, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in Kanawha County, I believe. But anyway, they see this, you know, shape flying above the tree line. It's got red eyes and it disappears. And that was essentially it. Now, after that, there started being multiple sightings in the coming years. And mainly it was around the Point Pleasant area. And there was a Roger and Linda Scarberry who was actually out on a date near this place. It was a power plant. It was a back road. And they said that this shape, this being, came down with wings and glided next to them with red eyes, and they were driving upwards of 100 miles an hour, and it was right next to them, and they couldn't shake it. So that one caught wind of Mary Heyer, and she worked for a newspaper called the Athens Messenger, and she did the first article on the Mothman, and that kickstarted everything, and people started having sightings. Now, the Mothman is tied to a harbinger of doom. Now, basically what I mean by that is legend has it that he tries to warn people of catastrophes. And what that relates to is, I believe it was in 1967. I get this year wrong sometimes, but the Silver Bridge of Point Pleasant, it was on December 12th, and it was fully loaded, and the bridge collapsed, and 42 people ended up losing their life.
Mm.
Two of those bodies were never found, and it was actually due to a broken eye bar. It was one broken eye bar, had a single crack in it. And it was poor engineering that essentially caused this. Like, they knew, like, if someone knew what they were doing, they would know that it is going to fail eventually. They just don't know when, because there was no redundancy. And that bridge collapse, people try to tie the Mothman to it, saying that he was saw on top of it before it collapsed and all these different things. That's kind of where the harbinger of doom comes in. But that was a man-made disaster. We didn't know what we were doing. And Two, that bridge collapse, a lot of people don't know that that single collapse changed the way we inspected bridges across the country forever. Like, they redid all of the requirements. They never built any bridges out of spec like that again without redundancy. And then eventually the Mothman was seen all over the world. People have sightings in Chicago. They've had sightings in Ukraine. They've had sightings everywhere. So that's essentially the Mothman. And also they had the Mothman Prophecies. So that was a huge Hollywood movie that had Richard Gere in it. Great movie. Highly recommend. But it's really cool.
Well, it's funny how once something is brought to people's attention, all of a sudden, the sightings increase dramatically. makes it a little questionable in my book, but
I wonder if you saw that with Pablo. Like, someone thought they saw him in Tijuana, and then it just blew up into 25 people calling. Or
yes, it was, but there were motivations behind that, and that was usually related to being financial because there was a $5 million reward out for him.
Oh, okay, I got you. Now, what? I just want to ask you one question. So what is that? Like, what would you have to do to get $5 million? Would you have to have photo proof, or can you basically say he's in this location and then they go there and find him? Would that qualify?
Yeah, the second one. So what we were looking for was information that leads to his arrest or death. So, because we knew he was going to fight. So if you provide the location, you were going to get a $5 million reward from the United States. There was a equivalent of about a $1.5 million reward in Colombia. So, but it was $6.5 million worth death to you and your family. That's the decision you have to make.
That's the thing. Well, and so is it a sustainable system? Do they pay that from drug money that has been seized?
I don't know. That's a good question, because now for these big name drug dealers like El Chapo and El Mencho and people like that, the rewards are up in the $20 million range. So that's a good question. I don't know. I'm guessing it probably does come from the Department of Justice Asset Forfeiture Fund. Mm-hmm. And then Treasury, they have the Treasury Forfeiture Fund as well. So that's a good question.
I mean, they might as well. I think there's a finder's fee, right? Like if you lead someone to a big drug bust, I think there's a certain percentage that they give the people, right?
Yeah, you can apply for it. There's limitations. I think the limit is $1 million. But if it's drugs, the government's not going to sell drugs to generate income to pay you. They're going to destroy the drugs. But if it leads to a cash seizure or an asset seizure, then and you're the person that generated the information, you are entitled to a percentage.
Gotcha. I need the tinfoil hat on that last statement. They're not going to sell drugs to try it. I could put the tinfoil hat on when it comes to that. But yeah.
Maybe you know something. I don't know.
I don't know anything, to be honest. I try to tell people all the time.
So. What was so you're teaching yourself how to do filmmaking. Mm-hmm. What was one of your very first projects that you worked on?
Oh, man. So the first project was a zombie movie called Homestead. And that's the one I mentioned that I was going to try and make at the beginning, because I watched The Walking Dead. I was like, this is so good. I want to do this. And so that was the first project. And I bought a GoPro Hero 2. That was my very first camera. And it was a fun time in my life trying to get things to look good. There's this really good video, and it's a quote, and it's by Ira Glass, who started this podcast called This American Life. And he's a really talented audio guy. And he talks about taste, and he says, artistic people, when they start doing a new venture, they know what's good, and they know what they're making isn't good, but they know that they have to keep going and try to enjoy the process and add a little new knowledge on every single project until eventually they start making something that they would consider good. And he said, if I was to put a number on it, your first 50 videos are going to be terrible. And I never knew how correct that video was. It's anyone out there wanting to do this, watch that 2 minutes. It is incredible. But all of those early projects, I never got to make that zombie movie, but my wife too, she sat and let me make a zombie on her face. Like I was doing like practical effects work. She let me do a zombie makeup on her that took 4 hours and she just sat in there reading. And afterwards I made the mixture too strong and she couldn't move her face. And like, bless her for that. Yeah. Yeah. I learned how to do a slit throat effect. So like with like vacuum hose, like heat seal hoses and this, you know, garden pump, she sat there and let me do that. I wish I still had that video to show. It was good. Like it was really good for the first attempt. So people would be terrified if they found that today. But all of these little things, my first project I really completed, there was a show called Film Riot on YouTube. And I used to, they had these movie scene recreation competitions. And there's one out there that you can find. My first YouTube channel was called Skank Entertainment. And there's like 34 videos on there. This is the first place I've ever said the name of that channel, but it's out there. I really don't care if people watch it, but it's all my first short films. And there's one on there, my first successful project where I redid the scene from Misery, the hobbling scene. I don't know if you've seen Misery, but it's a Stephen King film. And this lady, I mean, spoiler alert for a 40-year-old movie, but this lady ties this guy up and he's a writer and she's a big fan of his work. And she's really upset because of the direction he took the plot in his latest book. And she was so upset that she done this thing called hobbling. And basically what that is they used to, and in the book, it's different than the movie, but I'll go by the movie because that's what I did. So they put this block of wood in between your feet.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And then they take a sledgehammer and they swing and they break your ankles on that wood. And they do that in this movie and it's very disturbing. And it's one of the, I mean, it was a brilliant way how they did it. And the guidelines of the movie scene recreation was it has to be no longer than a minute and it has to be shot for shot. Sound effect for sound effect, every single thing you try to just recreate the scene with like no money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that and we kind of nailed it. I mean, there's a lot of things I look at now where I'm like, oh, that's cringy. But I knew how to do visual effects. So we actually won that channel's competition. And it was a pretty big channel. Like they had like 700,000 or 800,000 subscribers at the time. I think they have a couple million now. And I learned everything I know from that channel. Film Riot changed my life. They built my job. They gave me the tools to do this. And it was really, really cool to see them say my name. And it's still out there. If people want to find that, you would just search like Film Riot Movie Scene Challenge. And the first one they ever did, we won. And we did a really good hobbling scene. So there was a bunch before that too. But that was the first successful one, I would call it. But yeah. I mean, we done like a 14-minute short film about thumb wrestling till the death. Like we done like some really out there stuff, and it's terrible, but it's awesome to have on record. Like it was just so fun because it was literally I can go back and I can watch me growing as a filmmaker. And this was 8 years before Creepalacha was ever a thing. So it's really like I had all of these trials by fire and there really wasn't no fire. The only fire was, oh, 14 people are going to watch it instead of 25. Like no one cared about this stuff. It was just for the love of it. And that has, that plus the productive part of doing things under a deadline and being quick and not second guessing yourself, that's allowed me to have the perfect combination to do what I'm doing now because you need consistency. You need a brand. You need good storytelling. And thankfully, I feel like I've learned how to do that after those tens of thousands of hours of figuring it out.
You have. I'm one of your biggest fans here. It's amazing where you've taken this to. I mean, it really is. It's just from, kind of like a hobby to start with, and where you are today, this the difference between night and day. What year did you start Creepalachia?
2024. Thanksgiving week, the in-laws were staying with us, and I said, hey, Poppy, would you like to come inside the basement and us do a podcast and you tell me some ghost stories? And he was like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. And he came down, and we talked for over an hour. And when I have a good conversation, I don't know if other people have this, but when I'm talking to someone, like any podcast, this happened with you. Anytime I'm talking to someone, I feel like a muse or God or something has blessed me with having the ability to sense and feel how the conversation is going. So like, I just had a lady come in, this hasn't released yet, but she talked about a place called Booger Hole, West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And I will sit down with someone, and when I start getting into the conversation, there's this sensory feeling that happens that just fills me with peace and calm and comfortability. And it literally is the same feeling I would get on Christmas morning when I was a kid. Like, it's like you're just sitting there absorbing yourself into this situation and you kind of go somewhere else. And I just kind of let that direct where my questions go, the jokes I make, the direction of the conversation is controlled by this muse. And I've noticed that when I get that feeling, something always seems to do good. And I don't know if that's a thing. I don't know, but I've been blessed with that inclination to have a sense of a good story. And Appalachians are storytellers at heart. So
yes,
this is a very selfish effort starting this. So let me just say that. It's very selfish in the fact that I love it myself. If no one listened to it, I would still do it. But thankfully, it may pay the bills. So
I feel the same way with Game of Crimes here, that I was a cop for 38 years. I don't know how to do a lot of other things. I've learned how to do, or I'm still learning how to do a podcast, but I get to highlight the brave men and women of uniform, of military, of people who are taking the initiative to promote things they believe in, like being a fellow West Virginian and you want to promote Appalachia to the best that you can, show people it's not a bunch of backwood country hillbillies that sit on a porch all day long. We got those people, but I found in every state I've been to in the United States so far, I've seen hillbillies in other states as well.
Oh yeah.
So it is a progressive state, not as progressive as we'd like to be, but it's a beautiful state and some fantastic people there.
Oh yeah. Hillbillies built the country. Never forget the people.
There you go.
If it wasn't for their labor, we wouldn't have a lot of things. So yes.
Yep. So I think you've already answered this, but I just want to make sure we cover it. What is it that Creepalachia, the primary focus of Creepalachia?
Sure. So Creepalachia has evolved since we first started, but it's basically showing there's more to the story. If I was boiling it down to Paul Harvey words, there's more to the story when it comes to Appalachia. And it basically started was like, well, yeah, I know I want to do ghost stories. I want to do crime stories. It evolved into like, we're going to help find missing people. And I have a whole list on my phone of over 20 that we've been involved in where they were found. It wasn't because of us, but like, I just like keeping track of that stuff. But also, West Virginians have very terrible conditions that they have been given because corporations were not held to the fire to take care of them post industry. And what I mean by that is like We have a project going on right now where we're trying to rebuild a bridge in Gary, West Virginia, which was one of the top 10 coal producing towns in the world at one point in time. So they had a bridge wash away. No one's wanting to rebuild it. For these families, there's four families that live across this creek that can't get across the river. So it's grew into advocacy like that. And some say like, oh, you've gone political. Like, no, that's humanity to me. And if you think that's political, this isn't the place for you.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that connection either.
Yeah, no, it's like, I think people like to rationalize their way out of inaction by calling it
politics.
Calling it politics or calling it whatever. I call it a rationalization on why they're sitting in the house. But it is what it is. But overall, people have really accepted it and appreciated it. And it's just an overall, like, I get called Creepalacha when I'm in public. Like, it's not JD. Like, the show's Creepalacha. My name's JD, but what a blessing for people to even watch the show. So it's kind of like my name now. So,
and that's kind of a badge of honor.
Yeah. It means it's working, man. It means it's working. but yeah, it's a bunch of things, but yeah, it's the Greenbrier ghost. It's the Mamie Thurman murder. It's also the fact that 16-year-old Shaylin Harvey was found murdered in the woods this year. And her family's trying to raise money for a headstone.
Oh.
Like, it's all of these things. And it's also calling out people who scam people. Like, we've done several stories on people stealing tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars from people. There's a guy, cemeteries are one of my most favorite things in life. And there was a guy that was just convicted of stealing over $600,000 out of Fayetteville, West Virginia, for people trying to get grave markers for their loved ones.
Oh, jeez.
So, and that has a Pablo tie-in, how he used to sandblast the monuments, you were saying. So, like, these people need called out, and I want to do it in such a public way that I want at least one person to think before they do something stupid. JD may possibly say something about this, so I'm not going to do it. That's the goal.
Excellent.
Anyway.
Do you have a criteria for what guests you bring on?
Criteria? So it's wide-ranging. Appalachian experience is the first criteria. We try to have a range of different things. Like, creepy to me is multifaceted. It could be, I saw the devil in my bedroom, but it also can be, I survived cancer.
Right.
It could be, I'm looking for my son. It could be, I was a mortician. It could be, I had a part in killing Pablo Escobar. Like, it's multifaceted, but also I'll have content creators come on, that are just hillbillies, and I want to hear their story. So we've had former copper thieves come on and tell me how they used to, you know, it was a job for them, and they'd take bologna sandwiches and they'd take lunch breaks and all these different things. So really the main thing is it's about the Appalachian experience. And if someone has an experience in Appalachia, like, we won't just have like an accountant come on and talk about accounting. There has to be some kind of hook there that I could at least explain on why they're on Creepalacha, but it's wide ranging. I see it as a lot of things.
That's very admirable. I love the fact that you're promoting not just the state of West Virginia, but all of Appalachia. Have you ever interviewed somebody and then you're like, nah, I'm not going to put that out there?
We haven't yet. Somehow we're approaching 200 episodes, and somehow every episode I find something that I really loved and appreciate from it. There hasn't been, I haven't ran into any situations like talk about one situation that comes to mind with that. Like Joe Rogan, the biggest podcast on earth, probably. He had a guy on that was a former, he's a felon, and he was, they have these shows where they have like wrongfully convicted people and different people come on and explain like what it was like to be in jail for so long or whatever. So they had this guy come on, and then a month later, come to find out, he wore a wig to look like a woman and cut a dude's head off and like carried him out of an apartment building. And I always thought, I was like, is Joe going to delete that episode? And respect to him, he left it because, and I think I would too, because I think those things are important to hear of how charismatic these criminals can be and how they can pull the wool over people's eyes. There's no one in this, like, there's no one in this world more charismatic than a criminal. And I will always say that. I don't know if you agree with that, but I feel like a majority of criminals you can sit down and have an awesome conversation with while they're taking your wallet.
Yep. They can, they've got the gift of gab. They can make you believe things that aren't true.
Exactly. So I think it's important for us to put in those perspectives. So I haven't had anything odd. I've had maybe an episode or two where I'm like, I'm glad I have a mag light back here that I can like,
just in case,
maybe sling if I have to. But yeah, everyone has been very kind. Devastating. So many tears have been shed in there. So much trauma has been for some reason told to me in that studio, and I don't take that lightly. So if someone's willing to put themselves out there, and now you could get a couple hundred thousand views on some of these reels, there's a lot of people seeing this stuff, and there's a lot of people that when because people get negative, you're gonna have negativity no matter what, and there's a lot of people that take those comments to heart. If someone's willing to put themselves out there like that, then I'm willing to leave it. If someone came and got charged with some, probably the only way I'd remove something is if someone came on there and then was charged with a crime against a child or something insane. But nothing like that has happened. We have a pretty good vetting process, which is basically me figuring out if they're telling the truth and if I'd be interested in this conversation. So, but there's so many come in now, I don't have time to see them all or read them all. And that's a big blessing in itself. But I want people to know, like, I may not have seen your message, so don't get mad at me. But yeah, it's, we got a little process there.
It is hard to get through all the messages that you get on the different, all the different channels of social media. I'm like you. I try every couple of weeks, I'll try and sit down for a couple hours and at least address the messages. But some of them are so nasty.
Yeah. Come on, I'm like, I'm going to leave that one. Like I used to clear out my entire schedule for 8 hours to sit there and make a troll look ridiculous on the internet. But then I figured out, like, listen, I've looked so many times where they're not even real people. Like they're bots, and the bots are getting good. Now, sometimes they are real people and I just feel sorry for them. So everyone, hurt people hurt people. That is a saying for a reason. And I don't want to add to that, but part of why people enjoy the show too is because they know I won't pull any punches, and I'll tell you like it is. If I agree with something, I'll tell you. And if I don't, I'll tell you. It doesn't matter if we're friends. Doesn't matter. You know, I've ran into situations, I guess one of the most odd situations and unfortunate situations I've ran into is I'll do a story where I'll have a really good friend on the sheriff's department somewhere, and I'll disagree with how the investigation was handled, and I'll disagree with certain points, and I'll put that out there. Now, I won't blast the friend. I'll just blast the investigation as a whole. And just say, I state my problems with it, because victims have no rights. The more I find, the victims have very little rights, if any. And I want to be a voice for those victims and make sure that I let people know my opinions on things. And that has probably caused rifts with friendships and all these different things. which I hate. But at the same time, just because if someone's my friend, I'm not going to just put that under the rug because they're my friend. I think that's basically how every problem has been created almost in history. So I don't do that. But that's probably the most awkward thing, but it is what it is.
Yeah. The as far as the comments go, the only ones that bother me are when they badmouth, when they say something really, really negative against the guest that I had on the show. And I've had guests on Game of Crimes that have been shot in the line of duty, have been shot in the military, have done such heroic things. And then people who have never done anything to help anybody in the human life, they want to criticize everything that we've talked about. That bothers me. It takes every ounce of restraint that I have to not blast them right out of the seat there. But then if you do, you're just dragging yourself down to their level.
No, yeah. To a certain point, yeah. Now, if someone's like bigoted or they say something mean or nasty about the way someone looks, like I'll delete and ban those people. Like mm-hmm. if someone's just an idiot, I'm like, this person doesn't need to be here. But that's pretty rare. Less than a handful that I've actually had to remove because they're not doing anyone any good. But I do that. And I'm like, I'm wasting more time away from things that matter dealing with your pettiness. So you just don't need to be here. Yep. So I have done that.
I'm with you. And I was going to ask you, what have you learned from people? But I think we just covered that pretty good there.
Oh, and me personally, I just posted a quote this morning. I talked about a quote that I love, and it's "Look for the helpers," and it's said by Mr. Rogers. And no criminal in this world is ever going to change my opinion on humans, and that overall, they are the most warm and collectively caring folks to ever exist on Earth. And you'll never tell me a majority of people aren't good. And it does it. That's what the small percentage of demons out there want you to think. They want you. That's why terrorism is a thing. They want you to think something else because of their heinous acts. And I will never change my opinion on that. So it's taught me a lot that I was right. People are genuinely really kind and down to earth and mostly relatable. So,
yeah. Have you ever done? Opinion. Well, this is your story, brother. Right? Have you ever interviewed anybody that kind of keeps you awake at night that still bothers you a little bit? What you learned?
Oh man, that's a great question. Really, I mean, any law enforcement episode, it's just a position I highly respect. And I know, like, I have good friends now that were investigators for decades that have real issues. There's a high percentage of PTSD, high percentage of alcoholism, all these different things, divorces, all these things that are sacrifices for doing things that you can't even talk about, that you have to just sit there and let people like me in the community form opinions on, and you can't talk about it because you can't screw up your case. And it's just such a position that I'll always appreciate and know that I can't do. But, you know, when mothers come in and they talk about losing their kids. There's a woman named Alice Cooper that came on the show, and she brought the sheriff's department with her, which was great. I love when we can have like victims and cops come in, and I think that open communication can open doors and move mountains. But they came in and she told me a story about her daughter going missing and eventually them finding her in a river and she's been there for so long that her skin, she was halfway in the river, halfway out of it. And she's been there so long that what was showing in the sun was bones. Hmm. And the rest of her was bloated under the river. And this is her baby.
Right.
And she's sitting here telling me this story about finding her. And not only that, not knowing, still not knowing to this day what happened to her. People that come in and share about the last time they talked to their son, or the last time they talked to their sister. And Megan Reed was that girl's name. If anyone knows anything about that, definitely contact me or the Boone County Sheriff's Department. But those stories hit me the most because it's true terror, true horror amongst us that for sure happened. And there are for sure demons in human form walking amongst us. And that to me is way more scary than a ghost or a shadow figure at Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever, has it ever become so overwhelming during an interview you had to take a break?
I've been able to hang on. We've had to take, you know, I'm a diabetic, so we take a lot of bathroom breaks. But we had, we'd done so much coverage on the Natalie Cochran case, which was a case where basically a woman murdered her husband. And we started reporting on that. And then we, after the trial was over, the verdict was in, we started getting messages from people who were actively involved, like there the night he died, there. And they were wanting to share their story. And I would just be like, man, this is a responsibility here. And they would come in, and I did 4 hours with his best friend, Chris Davis, like Michael Cochran is who died and was murdered. Stuff like that. I don't know. It's not a surreal's not the word. I'm not sure, but it's like you're not involved, but these people become almost like family to you, to where you not only murdered their friend, you murdered my friend. And I never even talked to Michael Cochran in my life. Like, I take this stuff to heart, and I'm very sensitive when it comes to emotions and people and ensuring everyone's okay and making sure. And that's the one thing I've had to battle with this is sometimes people just, you can't convince them. Sometimes you just gotta stay the path, keep doing your thing, fight for the greater good, speak the truth, and move on. And, but thankfully during the show, we've been able to hang on other than the occasional bathroom break.
Have the police ever reached out to you about something you've had on the show or some information that they heard that really piqued their interest?
So, not the police. I mean, yes, I have some sources out there. Uh-huh. Law enforcement, yeah. I mean, I have some contacts. Like, we got investigators, we got state police, we got prosecutors are starting to like really reach out. It's typically prosecutors. And the reason being is like when I see someone is unconstitutionally arrested, if there's one thing I love in this world, it's the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to not say something. And when we do that, like an elderly woman got arrested and that I felt was free speech. When we do that, there's a few hundred thousand people that see this now. So I can pretty much guarantee that I'm going to hear from someone. And typically it's the prosecution office. But as far as helping, I mean, yeah, we've kind of helped bring charges on people. We've helped in many ways. We've had people that were missing. This happened 3 times, 3 different people. They were missing, had missing reports filed. Their family members contacted me. The missing person will get on the comment thread and say, hey, I'm not missing. I don't talk to my family anymore. I don't, you know, stuff like that. So we've kind of solved missing person cases just on the comment section. So that's what I like to do the most. I like to find finality because there's so many cases that don't.
And I'm with you when you were talking about the Constitution. I was just pulling out of my desk drawer here. I keep this, if you can see it, right here in my desk drawer.
Copy
of the United States Constitution, because I took an oath to defend and protect that. You're living up to it, and you didn't even take an oath, but you respect it. You know the value of it. I'm not going political, so.
Well, and the value of disagreement. Like, The Constitution isn't to rationalize your beliefs. It's for all of us to follow. And to the true meaning of the Constitution to me is fighting for someone you don't agree with because their First Amendment rights been taken. So that's kind of what it is to me.
Absolutely.
But yeah.
And we're coming up here on the end of episode one, but just a couple more questions. Have you ever been afraid of any of the guests that you've had on, either before or after the interview?
No. Yeah. So that's awkward too. Like I haven't. We haven't. Now we've had a couple people reach out that hasn't come to fruition. We've had people where, okay, I'll talk about Shailen Harvey, for instance. So Shailen Harvey is the 16-year-old out of Kanawha County who was essentially her stepfather was arrested for incest. He was put in jail, $100,000 cash only bond. So he's in there. A week later, they find her body. It's a homicide. No charges have been filed yet. I think an indictment's probably going to come in September, but we'll see. But anyway, so that comes out. And it's awful. 16 years old, been most likely sexually assaulted. Just horrific, awful case. And I started looking back and this dude was commenting on our threads. Because we were looking for her. And he was commenting on there. And his comments were so odd when I went back and looked at it. And I was like, man, this is crazy. So, but like the reach of the show, like I know for a fact, I'm talking to murderers. I'm talking to people who know exactly what happened to these people I'm talking about. And I'm glad because I want them to know that we're turning the pressure up and I want them to know that we're not going to give up. And hopefully that will force some information. Now, I'm very safe, I'll say that, on how I do these things. So nobody trying to play no games out there. but anyway, that's the odd part. I've had people reach out who have been connected to potential murderers, the main suspects of people missing in cases that have been 20, 30 years, who have thought about coming on the show, and then they decide not to. But I would welcome those opportunities because if there's one thing I can do, I can make pretzels. And I'm very good at it. So I'll say that. I can do that in an interview too. So, So that's kind of the only weird part.
How about, and this is the last question for today, but have you ever been threatened because of any of this?
Yes, I have. I've received a few and they're usually baseless. Watch where you're going in Beckley or stuff like that or whatever. That's part of it. We haven't got one in a long time. I take the appropriate steps when those situations happen and we're very safe. I'll say that. So, yeah. I believe in the Second Amendment. That's where I'll leave it. But yeah, it's part of it. It's part of it, man. When you start reaching so many people, you're going to have a percentage of everyone. And that means a percentage of psychos are going to be listening. So you got to do what you got to do.
Well, brother, we've been going over an hour now. So, ladies and gentlemen, JD has agreed to join us again tomorrow because there's one particular docuseries that he created that I want to talk about tomorrow. You're probably thinking, wow, this is a different guest. He wasn't in the military. He wasn't in law enforcement. He wasn't a former criminal, or at least nothing that he's admitted to yet. Might have had something to do with him driving a coal truck, because I've seen some of those coal truck drivers, and they're a little crazy.
I may have smoked a few things that weren't too legal, but I never got caught. But I did have my medical card, so.
When he's talking about cigarettes before he was 21 years old, that's what he's talking about there. So,
yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about.
But what you've heard today is things that are tied into criminal cases. That's why at the beginning I said he's become somewhat of an investigator, whether he wanted to be or not. And it's by his own choice because he has that curiosity and he cares about doing the right thing. So how could you not have somebody like that on the show? So, JD, thank you for joining us today, brother. Looking forward to having you back tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Can't wait. Thank you.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. If you haven't checked us out on Patreon yet, go to patreon.com/gameofcrimes. Come over, look at some of the crazy things we do over there. You get 4 days early access to every week's episodes that's going to be on if you're at the right level. I do a case of the month. Right now, I'm doing some interviews that Javier and I did about the Medellin cartel and bringing down Pablo Escobar, as well as the two case agents that brought down the Cali cartel. That's some bonus episodes on there. There's other, a lot of fun stuff on there. So come over and check us out, see what you think. You can even join for free and listen to the first 5 minutes. It won't cost you a penny. So just check us out. If you like it, sign up. But until tomorrow, everybody stay safe out there. God bless. We'll see you then.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.